Mr. Ripunga, you are the acting executive director of the Privatization Commission in Malawi. I just want to find out in the first place, what is privatization?
Well, there's so many definitions of privatization, but the one I like is the transfer of risks and benefits associated with the ownership, operation, and management of public enterprises to the private sector.
For close to a decade, Malawi has been undertaking a program where it is privatizing some of its entities. Can you just tell me, what are the benefits of privatization?
Well, the benefits are several. What you call a benefit very much depends on the objective of privatization. So the objectives define the benefits, so to speak. Why did we privatize in the first place? Why did we decide on the privatization, to embark on the privatization program? I think there were a number of reasons. First and foremost, there is a clear evidence that the private sector, in terms of management of commercial operations, they have a competitive edge over the public sector. Because the public sector is a bureaucracy, decision-making takes too long, and so what you find is entrepreneurs in the private sector are better at managing risks, are much more committed towards the profit maximization goal, and therefore we believe that if you transfer ownership and management to the private sector, basically you increase the value of enterprises, you stimulate the operations because you have new skills, more incentives, and also private sector is better placed to face competitive pressures. So what do we benefit at the end of the day? Where you have more competition, which results in better quality of products, competitive prices. You probably can see this in the banking sector, where you have, previously we only had two banks. Right now, there are several banks, and they are all competing to offer high quality service on the market. Sugar was very, very scarce. It's not scarce anymore. You rarely find it all over the place.
One would ask that when these government controlled institutions are placed into the hands of the private sector, who benefits from this?
Well, first of all, let's look at the objectives of privatization. One of them is to reduce monopoly. Monopoly practices have a tendency to exploit consumers, and so through privatization, especially where we ensure that we are not entrenching further monopolies, privatization has resulted in competition. Look at the dairy industry. So many suppliers now who are able to supply milk. I already mentioned the example of sugar. And the other benefit is some industries were virtually collapsing. Take, for example, the food processing plant at Gramil. Immediately prior to privatization, there were literally no jobs. And the same was true about David Whitehead. And so when we privatize grain and milling, the evidence is very, very clear, self-evident. You had a much better equipped private sector who not only updated the machines, but was also able to create jobs that were never there in the first place. And you can go even as far as Ryply, Sukoma, everywhere. What you have is a situation where employment levels have gone up, and you have a competitive market, basically.
In your explanation, you're saying there is an increase in terms of competition. What is the benefit that these new owners, private owners, now benefit from this privatization?
Yes, it's not a secret. A private sector investor wants profit. And therefore, by acquiring these public enterprises, they intend to package them in such a way that make them efficient and profitable. So there's no doubt that the private sector investors benefit through generation of profits from these enterprises. But also at a point of sale, the government benefits through privatization proceeds that are generated from the transaction. I probably should add, remember before privatization, we never had a stock market. But right now we have the stock exchange, and if you look at the candidates of the stock exchange, you discover that more than 50% of them came from the privatization process. We are currently working on one or two. I'll probably announce at some stage in the future, clearly benefiting the investing public in terms of participation on the capital market. So privatization has helped to develop the capital market, and therefore you and me, if we want to save our money, not only can we go to the banks now, but we can also buy shares on the stock market.
When these companies are placed into private hands, there are some employees still working in that particular organization. What is the benefit of the employees in that particular privatized institution?
Yes, in all cases of privatization, one of the most critical subjects that we have to face is how to treat employees. And on one hand, we would like to ensure that the private sector operator, we don't tie their hands, because if we do tie their hands, then we'll end up in a self-fulfilling prophecy where, in fact, afterwards, the operations will collapse because of conditions that prevailed before privatization. And so the policy framework allows the private sector to decide how many employees they would want after privatization. Nonetheless, the government is always committed to ensuring that as much as possible, the operator takes on these employees. I mean, it's not like a situation where we simply ignore these employees. We encourage the private sector to take as many as possible. In fact, the evaluation criteria used in selecting an investor, one of the key ones is ability to create employment, to retain employment, to retrain employment. So way before privatization, we'll be negotiating to ensure that as many as possible are retained and also reoriented into the new culture. But for those who inevitably have to be retrenched, we always ensure that they get a decent package, one that in one way or the other mitigates their suffering immediately after privatization. You might want to know that way before the new labor laws were enacted, the privatization program in Malawi had already started paying people retrenchment benefits very much along the lines of the current labor laws. So when the new laws were passed, we found ourselves, in fact, already on the right-hand side of the law.
But to say the fact, privatization have been seen as a tool for job losses.
Retrenchment benefits very much along the lines of the current labor laws. So when the new laws were passed, we found ourselves, in fact, already on the right-hand side of the law.
But to say the fact, privatization have been welcomed, have been seen as a tool for maybe job losses, in terms, especially for the working class. Why has the working class resisted privatization, in your own view?
I think, let me tell you, privatization is really a form of a merger or an acquisition. I mean, in mature capital markets, even in the private sector, you still talk of mergers and acquisition. One private sector company buying off another one or merging with another one. Now, let's face it, when there is change of guards, change of ownership, that introduces an uncertainty that is not pleasant to employees and is not pleasant to managers. Probably I wouldn't be pleasant. I mean, I would be just as anxious because you're talking of a change of owners. And so it's not surprising that privatization creates quite a bit of anxiety on the part of employees, because it means change of culture. Employees are now migrating into a regime that is so particular about performance, efficiencies, a regime that doesn't hesitate to take stiff measures for those who do not comply. So naturally, it's human nature that people would tend to feel a bit jittery about that. However, I would like to concede that we have had some cases where indeed privatization has literally resulted in people losing employment. I think the best example I can give is the Malawi Book Service, because it was basically liquidated, and therefore there was no opportunity for employees to carry on to the new owner. But when you look at the rest of examples, we have data, in fact, that compares the level of employees before and the level of employees after. And it is actually not true to attribute or to generalize that privatization results in unemployment. I can actually argue that in a number of cases where people have resisted privatization, and the example is Grain and Milling Company, privatization took too long to be finalized. In the end, the company literally stopped. Okay, in other words, there was no money to run it, and the people lost jobs. It was only after privatization came into being that we saw the new owners asking for, or at least recruiting new people.
When you're explaining about the benefits of privatization to the employees, you mentioned something like training, encouraging the new owners to at least accommodate most of the employees in that particular organization. Can you give examples here in Malawi?
Come again, sorry.
In your explanation on the benefits of employees,
yes.
The benefits that employees get from privatization, you were mentioning something like trainings, at least encouraging the new owners to retain the workers. Mm-hmm. Can you give examples of institutions that have been privatized and their employees have benefited? That you, as a man who has been running this program here in Malawi, know that there are employees in that particular organization that have really benefited from this privatization thing.
Sure. Let me give an example of packaging industry. By the way, packaging industry is a very good example of a privatization scenario where almost nothing was done to employees, including at the top. The managing director of packaging industry is the same one that was there. We're now talking of almost 6 years after privatization, maybe even seven. Nothing has changed. However, to the extent that packaging industry is owned by a South African investor, Nampak, right, what you now see is that employees and managers at packaging industries are able now to access training modules that are offered to the Nampak group. And the same is probably true for Ilovo, and now even the recently privatized MTL, where employees now have a wider pool of resources, training resources, management practices that probably were never there before. I could go on and on, but perhaps these are the best examples I can give in terms of empowerment of employees, specifically as a result of privatization.
Mr. Lipunga, you've been in this privatization process all along, and now you have the advantage that you are at the helm. I think you can give an example of institutions that you think that should not be privatized. What sector?
Even as an advocate of privatization, I'm aware that there will be certain sectors where we may not necessarily apply traditional privatization approaches. I mean, definitely the police. You don't want to privatize the police. You don't want to privatize the army, essential services. The various essential services that you have, which are carried out by government departments. But the criteria that is used to determine what you can privatize and what you can't privatize is A, is it an essential service? And can that social service be provided by the private sector in the same way it can be supplied by the government? If the answer is that, in fact, there will be no private sector interest, or if there will be some interest, it will be exploitative, or it will not be necessarily available, be available throughout the country, those services have to be retained by the government. And I think, we haven't necessarily privatized everything. I mean, we sold some of the farms. A lot of other farms remained in government. We are not privatizing ADMAC, as you're aware. The government is introducing reforms, but that's not privatization, and we are not even handling that ourselves. There's been a lot of controversy about water. The Privatization Commission has not received instructions to privatize water in a manner that the public understands. Namely, we are not going to sell water boards as such. So, yes, there are a lot more examples I could give. But having said that, we must remember that the government itself undergoes reforms. Okay, people must never have this feeling that if you reform something, then always it is privatization. Governments throughout the world are also in themselves going through reforms, and I think you've probably heard of even PPPs, public-private partnerships, where services that were traditionally the domain of the public sector, government can decide to package them different in such a way that certain aspects of them may be subcontracted to the private sector. It's a reform in the public sector, and really it is not within the definition or the scope of the definition of the original privatization approach.